The guy knew there was a chick swinging an axe.
He knew he was going to be in trouble.
Have 911 on ready.
Do you guys hear me?
We hear you, but we don't see you. Are you what hiding? The
heck? Oh, there we go. There we go.
I don't like this. Hold on. Okay. Wait, like that's not right either.
It doesn't look right about me in that corner. Man, welcome back. First show since the Mel interview. Huge Mel interview.
I know. Congratulations on that. That was pretty epic.
It was fun.
Yeah, what we're going to do. All right. So first off, we got locals back. So what we're going to do is we're going to discuss a little behind the scenes of the Mel interview. And we're going to get into why Nicholas Cavazos decided to declare war on his good friend Timothy Flanders today.
Flames everywhere.
I'm driving at work today and all of a sudden I see why one Peter Five and Tim Flanders are wrong. And I'm like, oh no.
What do you do? All I was thinking was, oh, I guess Nick doesn't have to wake up so early on Mondays anymore.
The thing is, Flanders is a really good sport though. Like he'll accept any kind, as long as, I mean, it wasn't like you insulted him. You were critiquing his position. And Tim, if there's anybody that is like good for that, it's Tim. He's like, totally, go ahead.
And every time Nick would say something about like Tim possibly being wrong about something, it was always followed up. But Tim's like Tim's the best guy. He's a great, great husband, great father. It's like every time.
You gotta give the qualifier. All right. So what we're also gonna do is first off, hit like, subscribe. I don't know. Like the weird thing with notification bells is if you hit notification bell on one video, you get them for every single subscription you have, I think. So that's pretty obnoxious. Yeah. I don't think you could just hit the notification bell on one channel. But what we're gonna do is if you join our locals, we will give you guys a link to the Telegram. Like we had to cut it down to only giving the Telegram to people that are subscribers on locals because it was getting a little hectic in there. And I see people getting thrown out last week.
Yep.
And we let
and yesterday even.
Oh, I didn't see that, but we let Joe Diodati run the Telegram. So if you get booted, I don't want to hear
it. I love how you just like,
I don't want to hear it. His name. No, Joe Diodati has completed. He can boot me if he wants. Like he has that much authority over the Telegram.
He boots both of you two, makes it his own chat.
Just make it his own Telegram.
What's funny is one of the admins did try to boot you and it didn't let them, Anthony.
Because I wasn't checking in enough. I was on vacation. You guys got to be kidding me. I think I want to touch on Cabrini for a second before we get into the main headlines.
I love how just 2 days ago you were texting, I hope we don't get pulled into this argument about this movie.
Well, something weird was happening because somebody from our Telegram was posting screenshots of the promotional material. And like in the promotional material, it was saying like talking about Cabrini, Mother Cabrini being a feminist icon and things like that. And it had our Telegram logo in the screenshot. And I know who it was. They reached out to me. They're like, I'm so sorry. It wasn't intentional. But every one of the screenshots that like Tim Gordon is sharing on Twitter has my face on it.
I'm like, your face photoshopped onto the body of Larry the Cable Guy. Specific.
Yeah, because it's from our blue collar eschatology thing. But I've been thinking about it. I haven't seen the movie yet. But the more I think about it, the more I think even my slight criticism is being too harsh because, dude, if you think about what we're doing in the Faith and Film series, we're like reviewing secular movies and showing how they're good. And then I'm trashing Cabrini and it's really I'm putting a standard on this movie that I don't think I should be putting because it's not being presented as a Catholic film. It's being presented as a secular movie about this woman. Right.
Which is telling.
Isn't that kind of the problem though?
Yeah. That's what I would think. Cause it's like, is it made by a Catholic company? The movie?
No, it's made by Mormons.
Well, but the director is Catholic. Well, I'm just trying to give it. Well, I haven't seen it, so I don't want to be unfair before I've even seen it, right? And yeah, I'm going just based on the promotional material. And the promotional material is like released on International Women's Day, and it's got all this. You know what I mean? Like it's got all this stuff. And my fear is, okay. So you have to understand, as a New York Italian, like, my great grandparents migrated to America in 1912, right? Mm-hmm. Father was like 13, great grandfather was 13 years old. He comes here by himself. My great grandmother comes here, same thing. Like, he's born in 1899 and he lives to 1996. So I knew my great grandfather. It's not like I didn't know him. So Mother Cabrini to a New York Italian, she really does hold a lot of just love, you know. Mm-hmm. And my fear was having that love for her kind of crushed by a secular image of her. And from the reviews I was hearing both kinds. Some people were just saying, like, this movie is beautiful. It's like an epic movie. But then I was hearing from certain Catholics saying it's not presented as a woman of deep prayer and a woman who does things for love of God. It's presented more of like a social justice thing. Right.
Yeah.
And that's
what I was hearing.
Yeah,
worry. Next, they'll just do a movie on Dorothy Day.
There already is one. It's called Entertaining Angels.
I meant the same people,
but there's a movie, and I didn't like the Entertaining Angels whatsoever. You know, it was a pretty terrible movie. But I'm one, like, dude, we're about to review The Mission,
mm-hmm.
and The Mission is about the Jesuits in, you know, in the Middle Ages, or like in like the 17th or 18th century, but it's a secular movie. So I have like this particular lens where I'm looking at it from a secular point of view and trying to bring out the good things in this movie, where Cabrini is about a saint. And I'm like, I'm wondering if a lot of people are holding back criticism because of relationships, right? Like they know the producer, they know the, you know, I'm wondering if that's why there's a lack of criticism, especially from trads, because trads are usually the ones to jump all over this stuff. And I see them holding back, and I just don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but I think I do want to see it.
Is it made by that Angel Studios group?
Yeah.
Same. Okay.
So, well, they are the distributors. They didn't make it. The director is Catholic. So, you know, I mean, I'm just spitballing here. I don't want to trash something that I haven't seen yet. I was judging it based on the promotional material. It was just like, it was a strange way to promote this movie, like International Woman's Day, this feminist story, this woman who will take no guff from the sexist of her day. And it was just a strange way to promote the movie. I don't know. Like, I don't know who they were going for. Were they just going for a mainstream audience and presuming that Catholics would just go see it?
So this is someone who, you know, a Protestant here, this is what they took away from it.
That it was about a woman being a girl boss with the church against it. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of, you know? So I don't know. I'm going to see it. I wasn't going to at first, but I think I am going to see it. You know, it's one of those things where it's, you have to not worry about who's going to be upset. So Tim Gordon critiqued the crap out of it. And the producer from the film, Leo, I forgot his last name, called Tim, and like had a conversation with Tim. And like, they had like a real conversation about like some of Tim's criticisms and stuff. He said it was a productive conversation. So,
yeah, she's not a saint that I have a devotion to myself.
No, because you hate Italians.
Well, yeah. Well, just because they don't exist, but no, there's just nothing in the promotional material that like made me want to see it. I just don't think, you know, I have no interest in seeing it.
Yeah, it won't be a film that we review on Faith in Film. It won't be.
Yeah, I had seen some promotional material, and I'd had some people ask if I had watched. I haven't seen it yet. I don't even know if I really will. But I have had a few people reach out to me and basically tell me the same thing that Tyler said in the comment, that it's kind of more of a quasi-feminist girl boss takes on, especially like corrupt leaders in the church that are holding her back. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, if this is made by other denominations, sometimes you have to put on like the cap of another denomination to kind of get and see like, okay, where are they at in this whole cultural movement? And then what could they do even with one of our saints in their films? And even, you know, the Mormons, for how conservative they are in many ways, you know, they still have their fair share of, you know, societal liberalism. especially, you know, when, for instance, classic example, The Chosen, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's made by an evangelical with the help of a bunch of Mormons, right? But the thing is, since I was a former evangelical, I see his writing of current evangelicalism all over it. And so it's what he does is
the cringiest part of the show.
It's so, and so what makes me so frustrated is that, like, when Christ goes to task, right, takes the Pharisees to task, right, that's obviously a good thing. But the way that he'll throw in these lines and throw in these innuendos that are not in scripture, and it's basically the really cheesy moniker of, you know, it's not a religion, man, it's a relationship. And you this see ministry, this leading in.
I need you guys to help me with my ministry, like a ministry. It's just such a strange...
It's weird stuff. And it's like you just see him like bashing. He'll seem to bash the Pharisees. But what they're doing, I think, in that film is that they'll take the Pharisees and they just substitute religion, like organized religion, like clerical, hierarchical, organized religion. Let's just beat down this dead horse, because to them, they see this like emblem as a stumbling block for conversions of people. But the problem is that phrase. You know, it's not a religion, it's a relationship. It's a
relationship.
Aside from the fact that that's a dumb phrase, because the word religion literally means a relation to a supreme being, it's also, I would say, it fuels atheistic tendencies. And this is what I'm afraid of in this film, is that at least it's going to fuel feminist tendencies of, you know, hey, you know, the man's against you, we got to smash the patriarchy. And especially if they're emphasizing the corporal works of mercy above the spiritual, that's the classic thing all leftists do.
Yeah, listen, Mother Cabrini, like the real Mother Cabrini, had a devotion to the Sacred Heart, right? Mm-hmm. She had, she's just, her whole orphanage was the Sacred Heart Orphanage. Like, this woman was motivated by love of God. Yeah, I'm sure she, look, we all know there are corrupt hierarchy who don't want things happening, and I'm sure there was a little resistance there, and there was issues that went on there. It's just the way they're presenting it that I don't look. It is a rough one to judge without having seen it. The one thing I want to touch on is this. So I've been meaning to see For Greater Glory, but even that I've heard described as a good for a Catholic movie. I will say For Greater Glory is a phenomenal movie.
It's not as good as, like, you know, the older classics, like some of the, you know, like Man for All Seasons and Beckett and things like that, but it's still a good movie.
For Greater Glory is a good secular movie and a good Catholic movie. Like, it gets it. It is just an all around good movie. Great acting in it. Great production in it. It is faithful to the story. It ends talking about the canonization of certain people in it.
The only problem I have with the movie is it doesn't actually portray how much of a bad guy the United States was in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That might be the it's one flaw. It almost makes the US seem kind of like and ambivalent.
It's because I think the Knights of Columbus helped fund it. And of course they're very Americanist. So they weren't very honest about the US role.
What's the movie about? I don't think I've ever heard of this.
For Greater Glory.
The Cristeros.
Oh, is it? So was this the movie about the Cristeros that was made like 20 years ago or something like that?
Like in recent times? 10 or 15 years
ago. Cool. Yeah, the one in recent times. I've seen some like clips of it online, but I never knew that that's what it was called. Okay,
it's worth watching.
I think we should. I mean, we definitely have to do that one in the Faith and Film series. That is, I mean, that's in one of, I would say that's my top three favorite movies. It's just, wow. It's top five for sure. I mean, it's just so well done. And
if we do it, we should see if we can get, well, I know Jason and Mark love that movie too, but Luis Medina.
Yeah, that's what
he would be a great. So we're doing, the next one we're doing is The Mission, and I have Dan Burke coming on.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So Dan Burke, because it was in Tim's Telegram that that movie came up, and me and Dan Burke were different, because a lot of people, like, there's a little bit of liberation theology in it. There definitely is. Like, there's definitely like certain things, but I almost think that will be a good discussion point.
Sure.
And it will be a way to like talk to people about liberation theology.
A lot of people have no idea what it is. So that would be good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, it'll be a good opportunity to talk about why this is actually twisting it a little bit and you shouldn't do this. And I think it'll make for a very, very good conversation. It's about, St. Miguel Pro. Not only do they portray him, they portray his martyrdom in an amazing way. Like, they cut his heels off, and he's, oh man, it's so phenomenal, that movie. Like,
dang.
And it just just one good actor after another. It is honestly like we have to do that movie in that series.
Man, that sounds epic.
All right, so we got stories to touch on. What stories do we want to do first? Let me just see what we got. All right, so Chicago Archdiocese cut government contracts and reducing staff.
Ooh. Surprised you guys didn't talk about the State of the Union, but we'll lose. We'll lose like half the audience once we start talking more about politics.
I honestly have. I will pick back up into political interest as the presidential race heats up, but right now it's just a strange thing.
Yeah, I was gonna say the movie doesn't.
Oh, St. Jose. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't portray Miguel. Right.
What was it? Oh, yeah. So, like Nick, I'll definitely want to have conversations with you about politics as we get, because you are way more in tune with it. It's just a strange time for me because I used to love listening to political conversations, and I just don't even care right now. Like, I'm trying to figure out what they're going to do to cheat in this next one. Like, that's all I'm waiting for. I'm waiting to see, are they going to hit us with a cyber pandemic? What are they going to do to rig the next one like they did the last one?
Yeah, no, it should be interesting. It's going to be fun. It's going to be the fight. It's going
to
be a big fight.
Do you guys think Biden makes it to the election? Do you think they allow that?
Oh yeah, no, he's going to be nominee. He's going to make it, and I think Trump's going to win.
All right. So, what should we go with? Should we go with the fake apparition story?
Yeah, I think we'll start there.
All right. So, Bishop rules on supposed apparitions of the Virgin Mary in Italy. After an investigation by a group of experts, fervent prayer, and attentive discernment, an Italian bishop has decreed that the alleged apparitions of the Virgin Mary in Trevignano Romano, a town of about 30 miles northwest of Rome, are not supernatural. A statement issued March 6 by the Diocese of Civita Castellana explained that the Bishop of Civita Castellana, Marco Salvi, after an appropriate period of careful discernment, having listened to the testimonies coming from the diocesan territory and making use of a commission of experts made up of a Mariologist, a theologian, a canonist, a psychologist, and with the outside advice of some specialists, have considered the figure of Mary in the tradition of the church and in the living faith of the people of God, after fervent prayer, decrees the events in question to be non-supernatural. So here, this is what happens. These are the events. Salvi's decree states that the events occurred in 2016 when Gisella Cardia, Ni Maria, Giuseppe Scarpula.
Hey, these are your supposed people.
I know. I mean, I can pronounce
them. I think you're Italian, bro.
How many names does a person actually need? You fucking Italians, man. Reported alleged apparitions of the Virgin Mary, Jesus, and God the Father, which, oh, man, that's strange right in itself.
Don't these Italians know you guys are supposed to just be named Frankie, Tony, Dom, Mike? Funny, that's you and your brothers, isn't it?
It's my brother Frankie, Joey, Dom, Mike. Those are my four brothers. Joey, Mikey, Dom, Frankie. All right, so she had apparitions of the Virgin Mary, Jesus, and God the Father. Have there been many apparitions of God the Father? Like, I don't think that's possible.
There's been a few, but I think they've been mainly in the context of more things in the background. So, like, I remember Sister Lucia and her discussions about her apparitions, especially the apparitions that she saw later in life after the events of Fatima. She would talk about how, you know, Our Lady and Christ would appear, but then in the very background she would see the glory of God the Father and maybe Saint Joseph or something like that, and maybe another saint. So, but it's not
unheard common. Of.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, where we go? Okay, so these events reportedly began after Cardia and her husband Gianni brought back an image of Our Lady of Peace from Medjugorje. That's a red flag right there in 2014. Mm-hmm. According to Cardia, the image not only weeps blood, but also multiplies food, and a message is given on the third day of each month, as happens on the 25th with the visionaries and the supposed apparitions of the Virgin of Medjugorje. Cardia, who created a nonprofit association that accepts donations and whose chapel was closed by the Trevignano city government has brought together numerous faithful and priests for prayer meetings, even though the church did not authorize them. All of this, which later became known as the Trevignano events, gained notoriety in 2023, the year in which Salvi was installed as bishop. On April 14th, the bishop published a statement asking the faithful not to attend the events Cardio was holding. In addition, the Civita Vecchia prosecutor's office opened an investigation for fraud against Cardia and her husband that same year, and the mayor of the town ordered the demolition of the chapel where her followers were meeting. Theological errors in the apparitions. In his decree, the Italian prelate explained that the messages of the supposed Marian apparitions contain numerous theological errors. He prohibited priests from celebrating the sacraments or leading events of popular piety that connect directly or indirectly with the events of Trevignano Romano, whether on the grounds of the Madonna di Trevignano, its association, or in other private and public and ecclesial places. The decree also prohibits priests from going to the place. Okay, so this is a weird thing. I'll go back to the story in a minute, but this is a weird thing where people are just apparition hungry, right? Like there's a weird one over by me, Our Lady of Bayside, that like they've caught in so many shenanigans and weird things like that. You have to be super careful of these things, man. Like that's why I'm weary of the charismatic movement a little bit. You know, like you even see the stuff going on with Daniel O'Connor and Father Maudsley right now. And I love both those guys, right? So I'm kind of sitting back just like, I don't even want to get involved in this. But you can see Daniel has such a devotion to this private revelation that it's but I know Daniel credits his mother's healing to the divine will devotion. So I don't even want to speak. I don't know anything about the divine will devotion, so I don't want to speak out of turn. I just know that having like attachments to private devotions gets a little crazy sometimes, you know,
and get a little hairy for sure. And that's the thing. I think a lot of Catholics don't know even like the steps of discernment when it comes to private revelation. And it's actually pretty cool. In all of the church's manuals that cover the subject of divine revelation, so it's just called the Corse de Revelatione, it's a really simple formula. It's just step one. If someone says that there's a revelation going on, right, you don't flat out just be like, nah, it just didn't happen, right? So you're not a skeptic, like a rationalist skeptic.
How awesome is it that we even have this kid on right now explaining this to us? I would have never even known any of this. Well, like, I love you, Nick. You're amazing.
Dude, someone's got to be a nerd in life.
You're just a font of like knowledge. It's so freaking cool when you come on.
I appreciate
all right,
it. Go ahead.
So, all right. So you don't go into it skeptical.
Yeah, you don't go into skeptical, but then you also, on the one hand, don't go on the other end. And there's a big word for this, but it's actually a sin. It's called rash credulity. It's a big scholastic word. But basically, it means those people who just accept every private revelation with no discernment. They just are like, oh, I read this on the internet. Sounds good enough for me. So both are wrong. And in the middle, the mean is you just listen to the judgment of the church. And so even when the judgment of the church comes out, though, check this out. Even then, you're not required to give your assent of divine and Catholic faith to it unless you're the seer. If you're the seer itself, you do. But if you're the rest of us, no. And so that includes approved ones. So for instance, like I believe in, obviously, the revelation of Fatima. I think you both do as well. But at the same time, it's not a sin if we were to not believe in it.
Yeah.
Now, is it true that traditionally the local ordinaries, the local bishops' ruling on these things are considered infallible? Not that you have to, like I said, not that you have to give them assent, but that their ruling is usually final, right?
Yeah, it would be that they're theologically safe and theologically certain.
Why has Medjugorje been said to be non-supernatural like four times, and yet
exactly
the Vatican is still doing their own investigation into
politics.
It.
But
it's really okay.
It's politics. Because think of it this way, from a PR perspective, if you worked at the Vatican and you know all these big name Catholics who are all, and I say this like with all due respect, but kind of like in the normie sphere, if you will, it's so much better to be like, hey, look, this is kind of a trend. let's get on this boat, even though we've already had some of the people who were in the original story come out and say, yo, it was false. The priest who's in a deviant, like, you know, immoral situation. And then the bishops were like, nah, bro, this isn't a real thing. It's just politics.
It's a strange one, Medjugorje, because there have been so many conversions from it of people just having these insane things happen to them when they go. I really always just wrote it off as God can write straight with crooked lines, right? I mean, even if something crooked happened at its foundation, God, it's a massive pilgrimage site and people are going, there's tons of prayers and confessions going on. So, I mean, God is present in some manner or form there, even if Our Lady isn't appearing there. So I don't know. Cause when I said that last time, Don goes, okay, yeah, now do that with World Youth Day. You know, when we were criticizing World Youth Day, it's like, well, there's tons of confessions going on and people praying. And it's like,
and at the same time, you never hear about people who may have lost their faith because of Medjugorje. You only hear.
Yeah.
I tell the story about a very superficial faith coming out of there. Right. So my father goes there, an atheist, and comes out on fire for God. Like when I tell you on fire, like he comes back and like everybody at work is calling him the preacher. Like my dad used to smoke pot. He throws his weed out. He's playing guitar at the local parish. But it's a very much a spiritual high chasing faith. Right. So they go to these charismatic meetings and he makes his life in the spirit and he's baptized in the Holy Spirit, which is a, you know, I don't know, whatever. I don't have much of an opinion. It's very close to home is all I'll say. Like I have many people in my family that have done this. He comes back and he's on fire for God. My mom's on top of the world because now her husband's practicing the faith. But my dad never had a deep knowledge of the faith. He never really was able to catechize me. My mom was the main catechist in the home. I wind up losing my faith. My father eventually stops going to mass and my dad hasn't been to mass in a decade now. So it's like this superficial, I'm very cautious of charismatic stuff because of this, and also I was brought to a youth thing when I was a kid, a retreat. And I mean, I told the story on air, but everyone around me is crying and they're like speaking in tongues at this thing. And I remember I was probably about 11 years old and I was like, God, I'm open to your spirit. Why is everybody around me crying and I'm not? And it really like, it damaged my faith a little bit. And I mean, it wasn't like I didn't believe in God or anything, but I remember feeling like rejected by God a little bit because I didn't. And I don't know how many of those people were faking it. I don't know. It was a lot of women around, a lot of emotional women crying. And
I knew we made it 29 minutes before the misogyny hit. I'm proud of you.
It's a new record.
It is.
I agree with you though, Anthony, because it's like I grew up in evangelical charismania and I would see people quote unquote speaking in tongues all the time. And I was just the odd kid that thought, you know, I'm stoked with my, you know, books and theology, nerdism and stuff like that. And these guys, you know, have the quote spirit. But then think about this just rationally for a second. All of that emotional stuff, does that appeal to our reason, our higher faculties, or does that appeal to our sensitive, lower, like touchy feely appetites?
The things that are very susceptible
to demonic. Yeah, to the demonic. Yeah. So Father Ripperger, he quotes St. John of the Cross so well when he talks about how the devil has access to our lower passions, if you will. So this is why the devil can, you know, really throw at you temptations of, you know, impurity or anger or fill in the blank, right? He can really do that. But the devil doesn't have direct access to the intellect and the will, right? Because that's the imago Dei. My whole point with all this is merely just to illustrate the reality that, you know, if your faith is primarily one of emotions and consolations, right? In Catholic theology, we're just supposed to get rid of consolations, period, because we're not supposed to be relying on them. And so if that's all that it is, it's probably not really
rooted. Okay, so you're not supposed to rely on them, but God is merciful. And early on in your conversion, especially, God will pour consolations on you.
He will, but check this out. Like, even according to Catholic teaching, like, it's better for us, even if it comes from God, even if we know it comes from God, it's better just to literally push it aside because the thing is, we're just so susceptible to be attached to it. And we have to go off of what we know. And that what we know stuff is just so not appealing when you can have the praise and worship, dark room, speaking in tongues experience.
Wow, that's crazy. The priest said it was your fault that you had a spiritual block.
So for those listening on audio, a comment says, I went to a charismatic conference a very long time ago. I was the only one not speaking in tongues. The priest said it was my fault that I had a spiritual block.
I've never heard of a priest doing that. I was always, because I grew up around a lot of people like this, and there was a lot of people that didn't speak in tongues, but, and they were involved in this movement. So it's, I don't know. It's a weird one.
We had preachers say that to me all the time, where it was like, you know, people who got prayed over. I remember one time I was at this conference when I was probably like 13, 14, and this guest speaker came, and he had all like 20, 30 of us line up in this row, and he was going around and like slaying everybody in the spirit, or they would just be speaking in tongues like in that moment. And when he got to me, I was, you know, 13, 14, didn't really know any better, and I could feel him pushing, you know, on my head. You know, what would be interesting to see would be someone who's putting their, like, you know, head above you or something, and then something happens. Now, that's maybe more demonic and physical expression, but pushing, you can tell it's kind of bogus. I wasn't falling down, and I wasn't speaking in tongues. And he said that I needed to think about why I wasn't speaking in tongues to see if maybe I was holding on to, like, unforgiveness or some sin preventing me from being able to, you know, if you will, experience the Lord's gifts, which is kind of funny on the one hand, because that same preacher also believes in once saved, always saved. So it's kind of like, all right, do you really believe then, if anything?
So was this back? A Pentecostal church? All right. So wait, I do want to address that comment, Rob, real quick. So I don't know. Is the Pentecostal movement mainly American?
It originates in America in the early 19th century in California. So it starts off at this large meeting that's called Azusa Street, which was in California. And basically it was this African-American preacher and this Ku Klux Klan, believe it or not, white supremacist preacher, who kind of somehow, even though the Ku Klux Klan guy did not like the black guy, this whole quote-unquote revival started. And it kicked off really when their protege, a man by the name of Charles Fox, really took the movement and kind of like sold the movement as a salesman across the United States.
How do you know everything? when I talk to you, I'm like, you just say something to this kid. And he's like, well, you're just a freaking.
Because I don't have a girlfriend yet, Anthony.
You're a Rain Man. You're a Catholic Rain Man, dude. It's amazing.
Hear that, ladies that are listening? Now, granted, any lady that does take you, end up like ruining one of the best Catholic minds of the
early 21st century. Charles, like, I don't want you or Joshua Charles. I want you guys both to be celibate
forever. Just so we can come on. Not really.
I wouldn't wish that on you. Okay, so, So it originates in California. The KKK.
This dude named Charles Fox. He like goes and sells it across the states. Now, what's crazy is Charles Fox, as he's going and selling this, he's living in an open homosexual lifestyle. Right? It's crazy. Well, I can't say open, but in the sense of practicing, because you know,
so Pentecost. So it is gay then.
Yeah, and what happened was in the 1920s and 30s, the movement split into the kind of classic Pentecostals you see. So this is like, you know, the suit and tie wearing, you know, preachers screaming, banging on a pulpit, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a separate group that split off from them, same aesthetics, but they denied the Trinity, right? But they still, quote, spoke in tongues. What ended up happening this, though, is in the 60s, during the time of place, like all the cults, like Jim Jones and stuff. Jim Jones was involved in the charismatic movement before he really went into left field. And then what took place from that moment in the 60s was the birth of what's called the Vineyard Movement. The Vineyard Movement blew up, especially in the 90s. And this is what kind of split the charismatic from the Pentecostals. So the Pentecostals, they'll be a little bit more doctrinally concerned about stuff. And they'll, you know, be a little bit more, if you will, reverent for Protestant standards, like hymns and stuff. But the charismatic movement really was just like the Pentecostal on steroids, because they took all the spiritual gift stuff, tongues, miracles, healing, but then they added an extra layer. They started teaching that there are apostles on the same level as the 12 apostles and prophets on the same level as the Old Testament prophets, today and now.
We have a church here in our town of 3,000 that once a year has an apostle and a prophet come to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So what's crazy about this is that it was super popular, and it still is really popular, but especially when I was growing up, it infected all of the just kind of normie evangelical churches. So all the kind of like Baptists, just singing praise and worship on a guitar and stuff like that, they all became injected with this charismatic stuff to where now, when I left the Protestant world, the definitive last night that I left, I was at this charismatic, if you will, vineyard style worship service. And there's this apostle going around, and this apostle, quote unquote, said two things. And this is while I was studying Catholicism. He got up and said simultaneously, the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed are legalism that hold the church back from a greater encounter with God. And two, you need to be prepared to be, quote, oiled up, because the Holy Spirit's about to make a new move across the world greater than
so gay.
Reformation. I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It has hints of the new Pentecost. It has hints of the new springtime, because this creeps into the Catholic world after the council, right? And
Do you know how it got in the council world? It got in through, there was a handful of students, I think it was maybe at actually KU, but they went to, this was after the council, everyone's being told, go and experience ecumenism, if you will, and these two gentlemen go to an Episcopalian prayer service at this event that's called the Ark, and they go, they get their hands laid on by Episcopalian clerics. So they get
baptized in the Spirit.
Baptized with the Spirit, and then they bring it to the Catholic Church, which... alarm bells for anybody should just be blaring at the moment. And so I talked about it actually with Angela Erickson maybe like 5 or 6 months ago, this whole discussion. But the big thing that I worry about is the fact that with this idea of just baptizing someone in the Holy Ghost, they've practically made it an eighth sacrament, because at least with the charismatics that I've talked to, they will say, well, confirmation is a sacrament, right? It does fill you and strengthen you with the Holy Ghost. But it's like if you were a glass of water, and confirmation is like a drop of food dye, right? So it hits you and it's there. But when we come and lay our hands on you, then it's like taking a spoon and stirring up the water, and the Holy Ghost is in every part of your life. And my question to them was, so does this mean that the church has been either A, doing it wrong, or B, doing it in a deficient manner for 1960 years?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But I know some of those groups actually hold the position that if you don't speak in tongues, you haven't received the Holy Ghost.
Yeah, some of the Protestant ones will go so far as to say that if you don't speak in tongues, you're not even saved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy stuff, man.
Crazy stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that we could wrap that segment up, right? I mean, it's be cautious. That's all I'll tell you. Like, because curiosity too is a problem, right? Like curiosity can be sinful, where it's you want to know what the prophecies are about, what world events are going to happen next, and is the world coming to an end, and things like that. It's you could get into look. I mean, we've talked about apocalyptic things on this show, but when you start getting into like current seers who are making predictions, and they're saying things like North Korea is going to invade this country, and they're getting into like really crazy detailed stuff like that, it doesn't sound like things Our Lady would say, but they're saying they're hearing it from Our Lady. It's almost like my spidey sense goes off when I hear stuff like that.
Yeah, just listen to the discernment of the church and just see what ends up happening, and just be cautious, be optimistic, but be cautious about it, and don't dive in 110%.
I don't know if there is a specific Catholic take on speaking in tongues. I know it depends who you ask, because if you ask Father Ripperger, he warns against it. But it's one of those things where I know people in my life who have very authentic faiths, and they speak in it, and I don't know.
Well, see, the thing is like whether you're so Aquinas mentions tongues, all the moral manual tradition mentions tongues. What tongues are, according to just like, again, before this whole thing kicked off in the 60s, if you were to just go back and look up in an old 60s book, The Gift of Tongues, the Catholic Church would have said the gift of tongues is a spoken language, a known spoken language that was given to the apostles and to certain missionaries and great saints with the end of converting other people. And it would have worked like this. If you guys didn't speak English, right, let's just say for sake of story, you both...
Anthony doesn't, so...
You both speak Swahili, just as an example. And I was to come to you guys, and I would speak in English, but you guys would hear me in Swahili, and you would understand what I was saying. And I would use that in order to try to convert you to
the one religion. The one place where it doesn't just say in Scripture, like, I know it says that in Acts, but when Paul is speaking about love in Corinthians 13, he says, whether I speak in the tongues of angels men, or, you know, have not love, I am but a clanging gong, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know if that's talking about tongues as like the charism, because some charismatics have taken that as a thing, but I've seen a lot of scholastics will say like the tongues of angels, if you will. That's just referring to the fact that angels can speak with, like, they speak, if you will,
directly intellect to intellect. Oh, okay.
Yeah, intellect to intellect, direct truth, you know, and in the context of demons, right, they speak lies, but direct truth. And so that it makes sense that he's contrasting the concept of, if you were to just say everything absolutely true but not have love, then it gains nothing. It doesn't really make sense to say if you speak in Shamada Homanadunda but then don't have love, it gains nothing. It's
well it does if you're saying it like if you've received this gift from God, that, you know, it's a charismatic gift you've received, and you're able to pray in this gift of tongues, but you don't actually live out any kind of faith life, like you're just a client. I'm playing devil's advocate. That's all. I'm just
always advocating that devil.
All right, let's see what we got next on the docket. So the new DDF document coming out.
Okay, let me pull that up here.
The new DDF document. This will be fun. I'm sure it's going to be a really chill document. No streams will be made about it. No 30-hour response to those streams will be made by a certain person.
Rob, are you Mark? Would you say we hit B, and that's how we'll know when there's a...
Yeah.
Okay, marker created, okay. Because we're going to try and cut these up into clips later
Why?
On. Clips,
why do clips they have with, to put his face on these?
Clips with Nick tend to go viral for us.
Why?
somebody tweeted the other day, this article the other day, and I was like, I didn't tweet it out, but I'm like, this is the Catholic podcaster's dream, right?
Like, you did tweet it out, didn't you?
No, I didn't actually tweet it. I mean, I said...
It was a specific kind.
A very, very specific kind of dream. Like, this is the Catholic podcaster's, you know, fantasy. It's like Fernandez coming out with a new document on human dignity. Are you kidding me? So the prefect for the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith said a new text had been recently prepared, having already had several versions. The Vatican document on the theme of human dignity is almost complete and will be published early next month. The prefect for the Vatican's Dicastery, the DDF, Cardinal Victor Fernandez, who is overseeing writing the document, told the Register March 7th that the document has several versions, but that the text is almost finished and will be published in early April. The Argentinian Cardinal, who began his work as Dicastery prefect last September, said a new text had been prepared in the past few months and discussed by the Dicastery's cardinals and bishops at the Feria 4. A regular Wednesday meeting. Okay. At this moment, we are incorporating some suggestions proposed by them. His comments follow his disclosure in an interview in January that the Dicastery is preparing a very important document on human dignity that contains a strong criticism of immoral trends in contemporary society. Oh, that's interesting.
That should be cool.
I guarantee it's about us rigid trads.
That the new document would include not only social issues, but also a strong criticism of moral questions such as sex change surgery, surrogacy, and gender idea. So, see, I'm thinking Wow. I didn't know that's where they were going with this.
There was that comment, what was it, like a week ago, where Pope Francis spoke out at, against the gender ideology, saying it was like one of the most demonic things of our generation. And I put that on social media. I was just like, always give props where props deserve. Like, this is a good thing. What I won't be surprised at, though, see, this is what I think. This is sad. I think it'll probably be really good when it comes to the gender ideology stuff. I hope. I pray. Of course, we never know, but I hope and pray. But I bet we will at least see one paragraph or one line that's a slight at the death penalty.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's exactly where it's going, Nick.
That way Francis can finally cite something other than himself. And the,
yo,
the
my boy Fernandez said something. Let me cite him.
Dude, that is honestly a brilliant observation, because this is the MO of the new DDF under Fernandez, right? They will give you something that sounds phenomenal for a section, and then you'll get something in there.
Read the next paragraph. It says it's been being worked on for 5 years, but Fernandez has completely reworked it.
So, dude, that's exactly where this is going to go. This is going to go. I think you're 100% right. It's going to be very good on sex change surgery, surrogacy, and gender ideology, but they're going to get their death penalty thing to be backed up more. And what's strange is they may even use it to change the language in the catechism on maybe they may even use it to veer away from the intrinsically disordered language.
Yeah, for certain. Yeah,
that wouldn't surprise me either, because it's like, the thing is, when you put on the political lens, it's like, okay, this makes sense. So Fernandez got absolutely hammered worldwide, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more with the Coptics in a little while. Right, got absolutely hammered everywhere when it came to Fiducia. So it makes sense to, like, I see where you're going, Rob.
I can't. I'm sorry.
Rob, you are a child sometimes. I know.
If it was anyone other than Kissy Face Tuco, it wouldn't even cross my mind. But
he got criticized sharply from basically everybody and their mom about Fiducia. So politically, it makes sense that he's going to make some type of document come out and kind of like cover for that a bit. But at the same hand, to push one of their other things, he'll probably try to get rid of the death penalty, because when you look at all Pope Francis's statements about the death penalty, he will always say it attacks the dignity of the human being. And he gets this idea of human dignity. There is a Catholic version of it, but really you don't see it in any Catholic theological work or encyclical until post-council. And you do see it really rooted in Immanuel Kant, which is suspect immediately. So I think he's going to do the death penalty, hammer on that. And he might he might back away from the issue of homosexuality and pivot to transgenderism and try to de-emphasize the problems with homosexuality, because that word disordered, right? It has that sharp tone to it. So maybe he'll get rid of that word and say something a little bit lighter.
But it's exactly what it is. If you like,
it is 100%.
Like, when you think about what a thing's purpose is, that is what it is ordered toward, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So I was having this conversation with Protestants the other day on X or Twitter or whatever. It's like, you guys, with your Sola Scriptura, you have no philosophical backing or foundation to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't believe the Bible is the word of God when it comes to same-sex issues. Yep. You don't even have a single and they're like, what more do you need than the word of God? It's like, no, dude, you have to actually start having conversations with people that don't believe the Bible is the word of God and explain to them that, no, the sex organs are ordered toward reproduction and procreation. Yeah. That is what they are ordered toward, right? So 100%. When you use those organs for something other than what it is ordered toward, it is disordered. I mean, that's actually what it is. It is disordered. So when they talk about you got to dance around this topic because we're on YouTube, but when you talk about certain body parts, you're talking about a disordered use of those body parts. You know, it's why the church is against even between married couples doing those things, because it is disordered. And to not be able to, and the way you have that conversation also can be, you relate it to food, right? Yeah. Like, food has a purpose. It's ordered toward your nourishment and nutrition. And when you abuse that, it is a disordered attachment to food, and you will, you know, get overweight. And same thing with exercise. Like, there's all these different things that you can have a philosophical foundation to have conversations with people who don't believe the Bible is the word of God, and maybe get somewhere with them.
Exactly. I use the exact argument where I say, okay, picture if some Muslim was to come to you and say, well, what more do you need than the Quran? That it says it in the Quran. Believe it. And you'd say, well, I don't believe in the Quran, so that's not an authority for me. Same thing is, if a person doesn't believe in the scripture, Aquinas uses this example literally in the beginning of the of his Summa. He's like, if an unbeliever doesn't believe in the word of God, you have to use some type of method. Right, whether it's philosophical arguments, Aristotle, etc., whatever, to get to that point. But you're right. I wonder if Pope Francis also knows that the phrase disordered in Catholic moral theology isn't just talking about the disorder of like human faculties being used in a wrong way, but also like when you read Prumer, like in his Handbook of Moral Theology, he'll touch upon, I'll try to dance around this as best I can for YouTube, but he'll touch upon how traditionally this is also a mental issue. Goes back to some type of psychological impairment that you do see historically in psychological associations, right? You'll do see that homosexuality is listed as some type of psychological issue, really rooted in potentially like, you know, abuses or the absence of a parent or some type of imbalance there on the psychological.
It's usually part of a wound, a psychological wound.
Exactly. And but then you see in the 1970s, right, that's taken away from the DSM-5, right, in the American Psychiatric Association because of pressure groups. They don't even give a reason why they get rid of it under the list. They just get rid of it because of pressure.
And the church says we do not know the psychogenesis of this. Like, we don't know the origins. We won't say people are born that way. We won't say, we don't know the origins of this, right? Exactly. So I was actually having this conversation with my daughters recently because they were asking questions. Like, it turned into this whole conversation, and they were like, well, what about, because I was talking to them about how our sex organs are ordered towards procreation. And my daughter was like, well, what about like couples that don't want to have kids? And I'm like, okay, this is a great opportunity to have this conversation. I mean, she's only 13, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, she did, like, we've never had the conversation before, and it led to a very good conversation with me explaining that, like, this is the purpose of marriage, this is the purpose of everything you do. And I had the conversation about birth control with them. And Rob, you look like a Colombian drug lord with that shirt and cigar with the tats on his chest,
right?
So true.
Did you, I mean, because a couple that doesn't want to have children, I mean, that's not even a marriage. If they are married,
right? So I actually had that
conversation. That's not a valid marriage.
If you go into a marriage saying you don't want to have kids, your marriage is invalid. It's so interesting because of my poor catechesis and me leaving the faith, I was so worried about my kids becoming teenagers that they were going to leave the faith too. But what I've found is the older they get, the more mature the conversations you can start having with them. And that kids are smart and they can grasp these things and they actually get it. And when you give them something that makes sense compared to what the world is feeding, because the world is feeding them garbage, nonsense, that doesn't make any sense. There's no order to it. There's nothing. And when you actually have conversations with your kids as they approach that age, they're like, oh, that makes sense. You know, like the conversation I had on ending pregnancies with my daughter, because I'm catechizing my daughter. She's making her confirmation in next week on March 21st.
Okay. Great.
And that's how this whole conversation started. She's 13, and we just started talking about, she had to write a little essay on how she can evangelize by using some of the things that she learned. Like, and it was very pro-life in the catechism material that they gave us and stuff. So it went from just talking about, you know, ending pregnancies into this whole conversation about marriage and sex and all this stuff. And it wound up being a really good conversation. And she was like, wow, that makes so much sense. You know,
for the record, everyone, I guess we're not having a show next Thursday.
So March 21st, Thursday, March 20th. Oh, no, it's at 10 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Confirmation. Okay. It's at 10 a.m. I think we can still do it.
Works for me.
We should be able to still do it. The other thing is we're almost at 10,000 subs and we have Michael Hitchborn coming on Thursday. And I think we might hit it for that show. Like, that'll be pretty cool to have Michael Hitchborn for the 10,000.
And as of right now, the plan is when we hit 10,000, shortly after that, we're going to do a celebratory show. And I think we're planning on doing it like an AMA.
Yeah,
you guys can ask us anything. And we'll keep the YouTube portion of it pretty calm. We'll save the spicy questions for locals.
Yeah, and we will get into some spicy stuff over on locals. Now, all right, so we do have to get into the ecumenical dialogue breaking. Hold on,
before we go, I did read a little bit further into the article, and it says that they think that the new central themes of the document are going to be more migration and the environment.
Yeah. And it makes sense because it's going to be, they're going to say, especially in the US context, all you meanie MAGA Republicans want to just lock people out and keep people slaves, et cetera, et cetera. You guys gotta be welcoming and opening your arm to them and not recognizing the real fundamental issue that we have, which is an invasion on the southern border and the human dignity of our people in the United States, not having things like jobs or places to sleep.
Of all the things that I take issue with the hierarchy right now. Like, I get the climate change stuff like that. You know, there's a way you could, I mean, I don't agree with the approach, but there's a way you could say as a Catholic, we are supposed to conserve God's creation and things like that.
We are to be stewards of the natural order.
But the idea of opening your borders to non-Christians and allowing them to, like, you're destroying your own civilization. And it's really troublesome. You're
saying, like, that we shouldn't have fought the Battle of Lepanto, that we shouldn't have resisted at the Siege of Vienna. You know, like, you're just denying 1,000 years of Catholic history.
The thing is, though, Rob, I've been really, I've really been pondering the situation in the church, and it's really been coming down on me a lot, thinking about how we had this whole period in church history where we were the triumphalist church. Like, we were the ones going out and converting the pagan nations and, you know, living out the Great Commission, right? Mm-hmm. Going out, baptizing all nations. But once that's done, there's an aspect of us living out the life of Christ where, like, I worry that a lot of people are losing their faith because they don't see a triumphalist church, and they're failing to recognize that we're in a time right now where it's more like the apostles during the crucifixion. And it's the apostles are like, what is going on here? Like, you're the Messiah. What is going on? And it's just that, like, I really do see us in a different period in church history right now, which is, I don't know if it's time to fight the Battle of Lepanto because of that.
Yeah, it's something where I think that you have to, on the one hand, recognize that, like, I think the church triumphant still exists, like, obviously in the metaphysical sense, but you're right. Like, in the day-to-day life of an average Catholic, what they see online, they're not going to see that at all. And I think the reason is goes back to what Archbishop Lefebvre said, where he says, we've made the church from a mission, we've taken it from a missionary church to an ecumenical church.
Yeah.
Right, which is going to lead us into our next topic, but that's, I think, the fundamental issue. And people's trust, I think, is more in, I don't want to say the church in the sense of her teaching, but the church in the sense of just the guys in the top who are supposed to have it together. Their trust is so much in that they're losing focus on Christ, and they're acting more like St. Peter looking into the storm and not actually at Christ and recognizing that, you know, there's always a crisis, whether that's in your life or in the church. But at the end of the day, Christ is the one who's going to be transfixed in your life if you hold on to him and stuff. So, yeah, I agree with you, but I do think when it comes to this immigration stuff, it's gonna be major, major cringe.
Oh, because, I think we're having another crusade, but we're losing this one. Like, we're going to lose this one. You're allowing.
Make you say it's an anti-crusade in the sense of it's in reverse.
Right, it's like, in reverse. Yeah. It's a Muslim jihad is what it is. It's mm-hmm. a jihad being declared on us because we don't even like the lack of thought going into this. It's like you're opening your borders to these military-aged Muslim men.
Or just from to put it safe for YouTube, a certain Asian country, a ton of military age men from a certain Asian country coming to the United States, and then also that Asian country buying up a ton of land and real estate in your said country, as well as flooding your children's iPhones with TikTok videos. If you guys cannot see the writing on the wall for a future war, I don't know what we'll tell you.
I think we're more in Garden of Gethsemane territory. Like we're in the beginning rumblings of we're because I man, there's two ways this goes after Francis. It's just Francis's papacy is coming to a close soon. I mean, it's not, yeah, you know, we're not getting another 10 years. It's coming to a close. And I don't know what happens next. I mean, I think severe persecution from the outside comes next. Like right now we're dealing with stuff internally. I think severe persecution from the outside comes after Francis. And I think a lot of the reason we're not getting that right now is because of Francis. Like, so a lot of people, they think they don't like Francis, but it's like, in a way, he is the reason you're not dealing with severe persecution from the outside antichristic world.
That makes sense too, because the thought would be, it's like, okay, if we can't infiltrate the church and make it completely 110% change, then we'll just get rid of you.
Yeah. And look, there can't be a resurrection without a death. Like the catechism actually talks about how the church in her final phase will follow her Lord into his passion, and it will die. And it doesn't mean completely dead. Like it will never be completely gone, but it will appear as though dead. And there will be a glorious resurrection. There can't be look, there's no human way to fix the mess that there is right now. Like, it's just way too big. There's too many Judases in the hierarchy. They all, something has to happen where the whole thing collapses and God brings something new out of it. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes, man. It just has to happen. There's no way. Even I kind of see politics in that way too, though. Like America, this whole system is so corrupt at this point. Like, something new needs to come.
Hey, and something new is coming, bro. 2024.
All right, let's do the last story before we jump over to locals.
Which one are we doing? The
Coptic.
Everyone should petition Anthony Abate to run for, like, I don't know, like mayor or something of New York City, be the next guy who goes and at the city. Rudy Giuliani.
I know a few subjects of the population he wouldn't get a vote from.
Listen to me. I would never get into politics ever under any just because I wouldn't want people digging into my family's life. Like,
or
I just
digging tunnels underneath your house.
They would dig up stuff from this podcast and it would be a wrap. Like, they would just find audio of me talking about the JQ women. And we'd be done.
They would just stop. They would start with women and you'd be done there.
Yeah, you're
right. I was
going
to say, women, half of it gone immediately.
I would never get the female vote. Actually, you'd be surprised how many women actually like.
You get a niche female vote. Yeah. You wouldn't get the youth female vote though.
I mean, listen, if my wife can love me, any woman can love
me. That woman, that's how she becomes a saint.
Let me tell you something, my wife, man. If I was doing like the weird science thing where you create a woman, like I couldn't create my wife.
AI girlfriend.
Nick is like 20 years too young for that movie.
I came home from work today. She wasn't home. I come home and she has dinner in the oven waiting for me. Like, she knew I had the show tonight. And she, like, I come home from work and she left a little note, like, dinner's in the oven. Like, I had to eat alone. She wasn't home, but good woman.
That's still pretty nice.
Yeah, she's very good to me. All right. So Coptic leaders said their church believes in human rights and freedoms, but that these freedoms must not be used to violate the laws of the Creator. Thanks. So cops halt ecumenical talks. Get rid of that. Okay. The Coptic Church has confirmed that its decision last week to suspend dialogue with the Catholic Church was due to Rome's change of position on the SS issue.
Not Schultz-Staffel. Not the Schultz-Staffel. Schultz-Staffel.
But I'm saying the things we've said on this episode, I'm worried about saying that word. In a video released on Friday, Coptic Orthodox spokesman Father Musa Ibrahim said the most notable of 9 decrees emanating from the church's annual Holy Synod, which took place last week in wherever, in Egypt was to suspend theological dialogue with
just the lost the Egyptian vote.
Sorry, guys. I'm not even going to attempt that word. The Wadi El Natrum. All right.
It's better than your Italian.
No, oh, come on. I got the Italian words right. yeah, so there. All right, so. Man, fiducia is the gift that keeps on giving.
So true. So true. And, you know, not to wait off into controversy, I'll just make my one joke. But it's like I said on the chat. I just said, like, only if that synod had watched Michael Lofton, they would have figured it all out.
Yeah, and you're going to hear people say, oh, it's all the media's fault. It's like, you don't think that the Coptic Church looked a little bit deeper than, like, the New York Times? Come on.
Exactly.
Dude,
exactly.
It's weird because Francis wants ecumenical dialogue, but he has to make a choice between these other Christian groups and the gay lobby. Like, that's exactly. You can only have ecumenism one way. You're not going to have ecumenism with these other Christian groups unless you're looking to do it with the Anglicans.
I think that's why he's like given up on the East for a major ecumenical dialogue. Cause it's like, if you think about it rationally, the Eastern Orthodox proper don't like what's going on right now in the conciliar church because of the new mass. They openly say the new mass is not an apostolic rite, therefore we can't really join in, plus everything else, of course. And then the Coptics, they're in the same boat, but then they'll add on this stuff when it comes to homosexuality. You see that a lot of Russian and Greek patriarchs in the Eastern Orthodox proper come out and condemn and etc. And so it's like, okay, none of those guys are going to get on our board. So let's go to the other wing, if you will, to the Protestants, but it's to the mainline denominations, which are already, you know, having the rainbow banner on front of their church building. And let's dialogue with them.
It's so absurd because the ones that we actually have the best shot at unity with are the Orthodox.
Yeah, they're much closer.
Like, we're acknowledging they have valid orders. We're acknowledging their sacraments are valid. Our catechisms are so close. It's just a matter of recognizing the Pope and maybe just working out a couple of theological issues with the Filioque and
like some Marian dogmas. A little bit more because they're semi-Nestorian.
Yeah, so you get some Christological errors there. But I mean, there's some big theological stuff. But see, that's the thing, is it's like, none of those denominations in the Orthodox world are going to be pro female diaconate, right? And so that's going to be another main stumbling block. But are the Lutherans and the Anglicans, like the liberal ones? Oh, yeah. And so it makes way more sense that he's going to pivot that direction. Because also, if you think about it, politically, where do all those denominations live? They're all in Europe and North America.
Yeah, in the West.
Right? They're not in Russia or Egypt, right? And so politically, you know, all those nations are also the ones harping on, you know, climate change. So he's going to be more buddy-buddy with them. Where is the World Economic Forum? Is it in Egypt? Right?
I was going to say, it seems much more, because there's no reason to really honestly court the Anglican Church or, you know, your other liberal mainline churches, because they're dying and they're going to be dead before the Novus Ordo.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
So he's not courting them for conversion. He's courting that wing because that's where money is.
That, and then
there's no money in the Coptic Church.
I think pan communion too with the liberal denominations. You brought it up before, Anthony, but I think you're right. Like, you already see in the 1983 Code of Canon Law, you're allowed to give Protestants and non-believers communion under certain restrictions, which the 1917 Code completely banned. It was very much so against that. You see Pope Francis, right, when he was asked in that by that Lutheran woman, right, can I have communion, right? He said that he wouldn't recommend it, but to have a discernment with your priest about it. Pope Benedict, right, famously gave, I think it was to Max Turretin, right, a communion in an ecumenical service, right, that he had consecrated. So I think that that's more of the move. It's like, if we can have this pan communion, female diaconate, some type of ambiguous line of blessing the world of the rainbow, that will get along with way more. And then politically in the background, you have all the rich Western European countries that are also pushing climate change, immigration, mass immigration, globalist immigration. All of that makes way more sense than Russia or Egypt.
It's, oh man, it's scary.
Bro, that's why everyone needs to move to an SSPX chapel. That's just
I think the ultimate goal is just open communion for everyone. Like, I think they just want to be able to hand communion out to everyone. It's like, all right, whatever. We don't really care.
It's a Masonic fraternity.
When you see open communion, I'm calling it right now. When you see open communion, World War III will happen. God will not allow that type of massive open and quote open, legal sacrilege.
Yeah, because there's already sacrilege going on, but it, like to actually, like I feel like that would be crossing a line that I can't imagine.
Like, I don't even want to know what's going to happen.
Wait a minute. What is that? Ben Thorpe is in jail. Yeah.
Hey, you guys didn't hear that? I heard that a few hours ago.
I think so. Grace is his daughter, right? Because they're saying that he kicked Grace on stream.
Something like that, I heard. Talk about the weird drama festival.
Like, seriously kicked her, or was like goofing around?
I don't know. Like, she's an adult, right? She's not a child. So,
from what I heard, and I try to avoid that world of the internet. For many reasons, but from what I heard from a few viewers was that he kicked her on a stream and she, like, the cops or somebody reported that to the local cops. The cops showed up and they arrested him, and she was like weeping and crying. She has this video posted about on this on her channel. Mm. She's like weeping and crying, saying like, don't arrest him, don't arrest him. Like, this was a joke. This was a joke. But a lot of people were pointing out, like, with that weird sicko relationship, how much of this is not just like her, you know, with cognitive dissonance, if you will, trying to justify some type of an abuse. Yeah.
It is a very odd relationship those two have.
So it's so weird. They raided our stream once on MOC back in the day. I mean, just weird, weird people.
I preemptively blocked their YouTube account when you that blocked happened.
Ben.
I blocked Ben, not Grace.
Not Grace, because we saw Grace in our... Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know what's going on there, but it is a weird thing going on over there. I don't know. They got a strange family. I'm not implying anything, but...
We all know what you're thinking, Anthony.
Yeah, I just think it's a strange dynamic, man. Like, I don't know. The couple of things I've seen, I'm just like, what is going on
here? Can you imagine if you and I had been in person during the co-sleeping debacle? We could have got into a fist fight. Can you imagine the numbers that show would have done?
Oh, man. One day, I'm going to come back on here. You guys are going to debate co-sleeping, and then I'm going to talk about the various views on public breastfeeding and whether women should wear pants. And
okay, wait. All get Rob, do we have, we still have that co-sleeping thing anywhere? Like, can we put that on our locals for people that haven't seen it?
It's been deleted from StreamYard just to keep up with the number of, you know, streams we have Twitter? In there. Well, I probably have the whole episode downloaded. I'm not sure.
We should save just that, you know, the first 15 minute argument. We should save just because, look, it's something that happened. It was a heated thing between us. It'd be
cool. We're going to bring it up forever, right?
Yeah. So it's a real moment. And the funniest thing that happened there, and nobody caught it, was when Kennedy comes on, he starts talking about the Matrix. And he was like, well, you know, the creators of the Matrix are both trans. And I go, yeah, their parents probably co-slept with them. And nobody heard it. Rob was seething, angry at me. And he wasn't even listening to me. I'm like, nothing on that, Rob? He's like, I didn't even hear what you said. I'm like, oh, no. Like, Rob, I was desperately so trying to lighten.
You were really trying to poke the bear with that one.
No, I was trying to lighten the mood with a laugh. And you were just so mad at me. And I was just like, oh, no.
I feel really bad for that, you know, that whole thing with Kennedy, because he was on fire.
Dude, it was a really good interview with him.
Yeah. And it was,
he like told this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and it was just this weird tension between me and you that whole But it was gay. Like it was just
completely
gay. It was like both of us just trying to like own each other. It was a stupid thing. It was, you know?
I thought it was ironic because Kennedy was coming on. And I think you guys' like original title had the word schism in it. And so people were making like jokes in the comment section. They're like,
well, let's be clear.
Like, Rob, we see a live schism right now.
Rob was not mad at me for my position on co-sleeping. Like there's this, that's not what he was actually.
We've talked about that off air. Like, we knew each other's positions.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't, he was defending it and it got heated, but he was mad at me for the way I went about it. And that's like, that has to be said. It wasn't like Rob was just being a, you know, a B over.
Cause sometimes I can be just like a melancholic asshole about things. I really can.
It, It was poor communication between us. He should have really just told me flat out, I don't want to talk about this and things like that. Rob was, he was definitely mad at me, but it wasn't necessarily about co-sleeping. Like, it just wasn't. It was underlying things, and but like, we, after that whole thing ended, it's like, people were like, are you guys gonna, it's like, dude, we're friends. Like, you think men can't have like an argument and get over it? It's just silly, you know?
There really is truth to the whole like stereotype of guys can have a fist fight and then they're best friends for the rest of their life.
Where women will just bicker behind each other's backs and then hate each other and pretend they're friends. It's like,
so stupid.
All right, let's go over to local. All right, sometimes it's good to have an argument. It blew off steam and you guys kissed it. Yeah, that's perfect. Exactly what happened. All right, we're going to head over to locals. If you guys are not on our locals yet, you're missing out because we do a lot of fun stuff over there.
We have not had a lot of subscribers lately because I screwed up last month and blew all of our local streams on my daily Lent meditation. So sorry. But
yeah, we're going to give you guys a little inside scoop about the Mel interview, some stuff behind the scenes, and we're going to get into why Nick Cavazos hates Tim Flanders. So you guys want to join us, man. We're going over there. All right, Rob, take us out, brother.
Okay.
I couldn't find my straw during the show, so I'm like spitting mints out while I'm talking because I usually just go like this, but I couldn't find my straw. It was like under my computer. It was annoying. All right, what do we got? I'd like to pull up locals just so I could see the comment. Can you? It's hard to do
them on screen, but it kind of sucks.
I want to be able to read the comments on locals. Let me just say,
someone here says that they sat in the same pew as Nick for 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, was it Brian Long?
Yep,
Brian Long. Yeah, no, he like 2 weeks ago. I mean, the SSPX now is the only place around me because my parish was essentially nuked off the face of the planet, and yeah, no, he like bent over and whispered. He was just like, you know, it's nice to see the traditional Thomas bless us with his presence. Something like that. It was very funny. And so afterward, I caught up with him. And he came back the next week. Just in the same pew. So it was kind of cool.
Nice.
I all right. So I guess this is how I'll have to do it. I'll keep my phone set up with the comments streaming so I can at least read you guys. I hate that locals doesn't allow you to pop comments up. Man, that's the one thing.
Did they get rid of that?
No, it's just there's no integration between StreamYard and locals yet.
Oh, that's lame.
So the Mel interview. So I wanted to ask Mel a lot of things about other movies. Like, I wanted to talk to him about Apocalypto. I wanted to talk to him about a few other things, but Father Nick's this is his friendship, right? And he asked him to come on to speak about Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah. So when I asked Father Nix ahead of time, I was like, can I ask him a few things about Apocalypto? I wanted to I wanted to ask him a few things, and he was just like, look, he's like, it's not that I think he'd have a problem with it. It's just that because I told him that we wanted to talk to him about that, I kind of just want to stick to that. So people that are like, there were people in the comments like, what a missed opportunity. You didn't ask him about the resurrection. You didn't. Everyone asks him about the resurrection. Yeah. There's no update on the resurrection right now. Like, the movie's happening. That's all that he can say. And I didn't want to burn a bridge. Like, when the resurrection comes out, I would like to get the resurrection interview. So we had to be very careful about it, right? And my question that I wanted to ask him, not even about Apocalypto, in the stream, I started
asking him.
I started saying to him, how do you go about not making a movie with faith as the topic and not make it cheesy like the Protestants do, where they bang you over the head with the, you know, Jesus is your personal Lord and Savior kind of stuff. And as I asked him, he loses his connection with us because he got a phone call.
Oh, that's right. That wasn't the other question I'm thinking of.
Right. So the thing drops out and he comes back on and I have to re-ask the question. I didn't word it right. So my question was like, I got like nervous and I didn't word it right. And it wound up being about like the pandemic. And
you would end up being like this, you know, this guy in here wasn't Catholic, but you know, he still shows, you know, virtue. Like,
no. That's a different question that we didn't air. That's a different question we didn't air. So there's a segment we cut out, and it was because we thought Prads would take Mel out of context, and like we were just being super careful. Like when I had watched the movie with my wife, me and my wife were like talking about it. She's like, "Well, I know he's not Catholic, but like what he did was very saintly. You know, it was like very saintly what he did.
Natural virtue."
Right. It was so I was like, so I guess like God does give grace to people in certain situations, even, you know, I didn't mean for it to go down the are non-Catholic saved thing. And Mel didn't answer in the affirmative that they are or anything. He told a personal story about something that just sounded a little off. So yeah. We were like
a little indifferentistic, perhaps.
Not so much that.
It wasn't indifferent. No, it was more
from a Jesuit. Let's just say that.
Okay.
It was something about a Jesuit. So we were just like, look, let's maybe one day we'll release that short clip. We'll say, I'd have to get Father Nix's permission first. I would never release it without his permission, but it, like on the locals, we might, but I would have to absolutely have his permission. But yeah, so that's a little bit of the backstory. I wanted to talk to him about Apocalypto because that movie shows the pre-Christian world in the Americas, right? So we've talked about that pagan world so much on this channel. Mm-hmm. And that movie, when I saw it the first time, that was the start of my interest in, oh, wait a minute, like pre-Christian world, like people really take Christianity for granted. Like this is what it looks like before Christ comes.
And what's interesting is we're seeing that same world return in like Haiti right now.
Yes,
exactly.
So when Mel made this movie, I've heard him say in an interview, like, I made that movie to show the future. Like he was trying to show the past, but he was like, this is the future. Like, this is where we're going. And I wanted to ask him about that. But Father Nix was, he didn't want to overstep. And the other thing was, he was like, you know, I'm worried that as a Catholic priest, recommending Apocalypto to people, and there's a whole lot of indigenous nudity in it and like, stuff. Like he hadn't seen it in years, so he was unsure.
Yeah, he wasn't. He didn't want to encourage it, but he at the same time like wasn't. He never said it like it was absolutely morally like wrong to watch.
No. He didn't want people to misperceive him. Like people will take things so out of context on the internet. It's like, they'll be like, look, Father Nix is recommending that. Like you got to be really super careful as a priest because people will take you out of context. And
for instance, he did a slight blurb about Mass of the Ages 3 on his Facebook. Yeah. And of course, he gets someone in there who completely misreads his comment. It's like, are you saying, you know, all Novus Ordo priests are invalid? Oh, who's your bishop? You know, are you in good standing with your diocese? It's like,
okay, boomer, chill.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. But no, I think you bring up a good point, Anthony, because it's like that movie, I've only seen some clips of it. I've not seen the whole thing, but it's so interesting. Like to sit there and think about what the pre-Christian world was like and the horror of what it will become again.
Anthony, you seen the comment? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What was this comment?
We can't the pre-Christian breathe. World, he's out for Harambe. So
what was ironic, Anthony, about Father Nix saying that on, it was on the live stream we did after that. about not wanting to show any pre-Christian nudity. Within 24 hours, you post an image from the mission on Twitter. In the background, there's topless women. Dude, and
all I did was I looked for Google image the mission, and I just screenshotted it and I threw it up, not even realizing that there's an indigenous topless woman in the photo. And I'm like, join us with Father Nick. Like,
oh no. Oh no.
So bad. So like that is going to come up because there is indigenous nudity in the mission also, but it's I was talking to Father Nick about it. And I'm like, there's nothing lustful about this depiction. Like it's, I don't know why, but when you see an indigenous topless person, there's your mind just doesn't go there. It's just, this is what it was, right? It's just what it was. It's hard to depict reality when I don't know. My mind does not even remotely go there when I see that movie.
It's so hard because it's like, on the one hand, you know, like, you hear typically this debate in a different context. They'll say stuff like, well, what about all of like the Greek art back in the day or stuff Greek in the Sistine Chapel, right? Yeah. The Renaissance style art. But the thing is like, even though you see that even inside of church buildings, when you read every single moral manual, they'll even discourage that. And they'll talk about like various problems with it. Sometimes they'll talk about lust. Oftentimes they'll talk more about.
I do think there is a problem with depicting a woman nude in art. Like, yeah, I do think some of that imagery in the Sistine Chapel is wrong. Like, I do.
Yeah. Feb even calls it out in They've Uncrowned Him.
I don't like any images of Our Lady breastfeeding the child Jesus.
You know how much, I was like, you know how much I got absolutely attacked for this debate inside of the,
in our own Telegram,
in your own Telegram chat.
I think it's filthy. I don't care. I don't like it.
The thing is, I don't like it either. But I'm just saying, you know, tonight, Anthony, you're gonna go sleep, and we're all gonna wake up, and there's gonna be a horse head in your bed. And, you know,
I don't care. I think there's something wrong with even. I think in the Renaissance, it was almost like a return to pornocracy when they were creating that art.
It was the second pornocracy.
It was a return to pornocracy, and they were dabbling into back with these Greek arts and things like that. Even on the Sistine Chapel, the idea of depicting an image of the Father. That's why I was wondering about like somebody having an apparition of the Father. Like there's something different about depicting the Father from the Son, right? Like the Son is the icon of God, right? So God makes an icon of himself in the Son.
An image. Yeah.
Where depicting the Father, like the Father is not like a human form. Like the Father is so beyond. It's like anybody who sees the face of God will die. You know, like there's supposed to be something ineffable about the image of the Father. Like the Father is being itself. It's supposed to be indescribable in a way. It's supposed to not be able to be translated into an image.
Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that in general, I mean, the basic gist of what I got to with a lot of these people was, even if it is, say, like, let's just say for sake of story, not a sin. We were talking about this in the context of public breastfeeding. Like, should a woman be uncovered or not? And I said, well, on the one hand, like, while I don't think it's necessarily a sin, like in and of itself, like the action in and of itself, you have to at least be truly charitable and prudent when it comes to your neighbor and recognize that, especially right in an over sexualized culture, as on top of just being a male, right? Men and women are different. And so you just need to be considerate, you know, for that and to think ahead about it. And
so there were people arguing that a woman shouldn't even cover herself while she's doing it.
So they said it should be uncovered even in public, and they got so mad at me that they changed all their profiles to images of Our Lady breastfeeding uncovered to try to troll me.
Oh, I don't like that.
And to me, aside from the fact that, well, what made me upset about it was not so much that like they were passionate about their position. That was okay. We can debate it out. That's fine. But what made me upset about it was the fact that they started kind of degrading my age and my gender, and I was citing like the doctors of the church, moral manuals. I was trying to like use reason, and then they just started kind of going to the age.
I'll tell you right now, if when my wife was breastfeeding, I would not have wanted her just out in the open doing that. Right? Yeah. And I think of my 18-year-old son out in public, and if a woman's doing that, like, I'm sorry, we are in an over-sexualized class. I'm going to get eaten alive for this too, I guess. But I would just think just common decency would just be to cover up a little bit.
That's what I said. I even gave the example. I said, like, it's one thing if you're in your home with your family, like,
oh yeah, of course,
it is what it is. But I said, like, think about this. I said, what if you had like one male friend or something come over to the house, right? He comes over to the house, and then the wife just decides to do breastfeeding right there, open and uncovered. If you're the male just sitting across the living room couch, if you will, like, think about how uncomfortable that is in that situation.
Yeah, if you're the man.
Yeah, if you're the man, like, that's weird. That's super weird. And, you know, thankfully, I've never been in that situation. I took that from a real life example of, I have plenty of friends who are new mothers, right? But when I go over to their house and it's time for, you know, the baby to nurse, they'll put a cover on and you continue the conversation and it's fine. You don't have to make it weird. So,
wait, somebody says, why do you guys have women in your chat?
Don't worry. The better chat is the men's only chat. All guns.
It is a very sensitive subject. I can understand, like you're saying, like, I'm not condemning people that do this. It's not, we're just giving our point of view on it. That's all. Like, you got, like, what me and Rob realized in our co-sleeping debate is, like, these are not statements of judgment, right? Like, Rob wasn't judging me that I didn't co-sleep with my kids. I wasn't judging him that he co-slept with his kids. These are just positions that you have, and you, like, you guys, like, people have to learn to disagree again without taking it personal and getting offended by it. I've had that happen with Margo a few times, where I said something like a general statement and Margo took it personally. And it's like, Margo, I'm not like, sometimes, especially I'm going with the route of humor and I'm trying to, you know, be a little hyperbolic and outlandish. And she's been offended by some things I've said, when my intent would never be to offend somebody. I don't. And it, look, I think if some women are passionate about this, I totally get that. I get the argument, right? They're saying, like, this is something that's just very natural. God has given women the ability to feed their children. I would not feel comfortable if my wife just was breastfeeding out in public. Like, I would, yeah. I would have preferred she covered a little.
Yeah, because what I would say in that is, like, yeah, that's a natural action, but because we fall in a fallen world, we got to be like, we got to put our neighbor's salvation and our own salvation on priority and just say, like, look, if we're in this hyper-sexualized culture where over 30% of the internet traffic is to impure websites, man, you got to be careful, right? You just got to be careful. And so that's why, just be considerate.
How about you, Rob? You tell, you have an opinion on this, or you don't want to even dive into on what? On breastfeeding in public?
He's still so seething and mad. He just heard co-sleeping, and he's just blotted.
So, I mean, there are some arguments about the possible, not dangers, but negative effects of, like, fully covering while breastfeeding. But all I'll say is, like, obviously I have a wife who breastfeeds our children, and clothing has come far enough where you're able to do it uncovered without showing anything at all.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I really don't think there's any real good excuse for, like, openly exposing yourself while breastfeeding. So that's just my only take on it.
Yeah,
man. I was hoping you were going to go hard devil's advocate. We could brew up another fight. To argue the opposite position. No, I think it's a matter of modesty and a matter of just being, considerate, you know, just like being considerate of other people not wanting to maybe see that, you know. It's, I know it's, I would never say women shouldn't breastfeed in public. I would just say, just be cautious about it and try to cover up the best you can. If it's impossible, it's impossible, but do your best, you know. It's just one of those things. You do your best to not be.
Yeah. It's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of just what's better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Okay. All right, Nick, let's hear what was your main critique of Tim today?
Well, that, you know, he's schismatic, uncharitable, not nuanced.
I'm sure most of the people in his camp, in the, you know, the meaning of Catholic board, would accuse you of that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. You're not gonna lie. But you know, essentially, basically, there was like 3 or 4 days ago, he wrote an article on 1 Peter 5. I think it's called "The FSSP is Playing the Long Game." And the basic gist of the article was going over that discussion that the fraternity's French superiors were having with Pope Francis last week, where there was all that scuttle. But about, you know, are they going to be canceled? Are they going to be forced to say the new mass? What's going to happen? And basically, he just gives a news take on it, just describes the events. But then near the end, he said something that caused a lot of controversy in certain circles, which was essentially that, you know, we should, you know, unite the clans. But then in his discussion about it, he said, you know, I respect trads who, because of their conscience, can't go to the new mass and refuse to go. And then I also respect trads who, in their conscience, decide to practice it and to go. And so my criticism was bordering around the lines of, I fundamentally think that at least his position is not seeing the crisis for what it is, which is that the crisis is not so much about the liturgy, although the liturgy is a main staple of it, but it's primarily about doctrine and the doctrine, the erroneous doctrines that come forth from, according to the tradition, the classic traditionalist position, the Second Vatican Council and all the reforms from it. And so basically, I felt like his take was a bit indifferentistic and placing on this pedestal the idea of unite the clans, but without any type of actual firm foundation on what are we uniting on. So he didn't want us to divide over things he saw as unnecessary, but I saw the new mass issue as something that is actually necessary to talk about.
Okay, I want to jump in here. I'm going to tell you what that is. This is a temperament thing too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so because I share that with Tim. I think I agree with you in principle, but my desire for unity in just you're right, like what are we uniting around? But I hate not being able to have just simple brotherly Christian brotherly love toward the idea of not being in communion with a Catholic who goes to the Novus Ordo is a hard thing for me to, you know, like I like the idea of unite the clans, even though I think it's kind of like idealistic and a pipe dream. But I don't think the average Catholic actually gets into the weeds like somebody like you would, where you're really like, okay, this is a doctrinal issue. I think your average Catholic is just going to mass and trying to be a saint the best they can. And I think for Tim, it's a temperament thing. Like he wants to build some kind of brotherly love of like Christian fraternity with other Catholics. I think
I agree. And you're probably right. Like I think outside of society circles where it's actually preached that this is a doctrinal problem, you just don't see that. You don't see that obviously at like fraternity or institute parishes or diocesan TLMs, like probably your parish, Anthony, you don't hear your priest actively get up at least once a month and say some negative comment about the new mass or about the council. Like I do, I hear that, you know, maybe once a month or something.
If anything, I hear the opposite. I hear about how I hear the Benedict line of how the old can enrich the new, you know, how the two forms can enrich each other, which is total nonsense.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what we got aside from all the people who left. You know, we didn't really get anything. But my thing wouldn't be, and I said this in the video, I'm not condemning anyone who goes to the new mass or goes to any of these Ecclesia Dei groups or anything like that. My point is that if we're going to be in communion, what that means, according to the Catholic Church's own teaching, is that we're all unified in doctrine, sacraments, and fellowship underneath the Roman Pontiff. And my point is that the new conciliar church doesn't even believe in the classic historic Catholic position on a myriad of issues, right? And so therefore the question, it's uncomfortable, but it's a good question. Are they Catholic and are they being schismatic against the previous pontificates? Because we always fear this idea of, you know, we always have the idea of being in communion with your local bishop and the Pope. And I agree with that. You do want to be in communion with them. But that communion also has to be in union with what they're teaching and believing. And if what they're teaching and believing is stuff like fiducia, I'm sorry, then there's already some type of small s First Corinthians style schism going on. So I want that union, but it has to be based on something. It has to be on a firmer foundation than sentimentality. And so I don't think we should treat each other degrading at all or see ourselves.
Yeah. Better. Like I think even the, like I don't necessarily ascribe to your position totally. I do understand what you're saying and it makes me think, but our disagreement would never make me not like love
Yeah.
Your friend, you know what I mean?
110%. Like... Yeah. And that's why, like, some people don't understand how I put up with Fowler and Bannister, right? And it's like, I don't say that we're like, you know, necessarily friends, like buddy-buddy, and you know, just hanging out all the time. But the reason I, you know, stick around and continue to engage in dialogue is because, you know, I hope that at the end of the day, we can have good foundational discussions and dialogue, even if
it's not.
We do disagree of all that strongly.
MOC money?
Oh, I get paid nothing. So, Jeremiah
is a tricky one because I know him and I fundamentally disagree on things, but he's starting to say things publicly about us. And it's like, dude, just like keep your opinion to yourself.
Yeah, and that's why, like, or if you're going to say something, do it kind of like I did today, which it's like, you know, if you disagree, talk about like a position, but then don't be running off and saying crypto set A or schismatic or Protestant and stuff like that. I mean, all kinds of nonsense.
I don't like that he's doing that because I do love Jeremiah as a person. Like, I, you know, he was dealing with something with his son recently, and I care about him and his family and what he's going through. But to in his paleocrat chat, just throw me under the bus like these guys have just gone too beyond the pale of anything I could consider. It's like, dude, like
I think the problem is that, like, again, you know, from his position, he really does believe that there is some form of major continuity between all these popes, and if the pope says it just has to be done, and that's just fundamentally not what the Catholic Church teaches. And that's what, you know, I don't want to get on my high horse and be like, Jeremiah, why don't you read a De Ecclesia manual one day on the church and actually, you know, crack it open or something. But, you know, I agree. It's like, I think we can all get along like on the natural level. You know what I'm saying? And even on a supernatural level, there's some basic charity of things like, you know, praying for one another, trying to encourage one another, talking with one another. That's all good stuff. I just think that the Unite the Clans message, which is central to 1 Peter 5, has to be improved more, you know?
Yeah, they got to figure out what they're uniting around. You're 100% right on that. I like the idea of like not bashing other Catholics, right? That's one of the main things. I try not to do that too. Like I don't necessarily agree with everything every other creator is doing, but I try not to ever get personal, and I try, I disagree with Matt Frad on a bunch of things. But he's still my Christian brother. So it's like, come on and have a conversation. Like, same thing with Trent Horn. Like, I mean, I fundamentally disagree with Trent Horn on several issues, but I still love him as a Christian brother. And I wanted to bring him on and have a conversation. I'm going to have him back on, right? And I kind of saw that.
At least while he's got more subs than us.
No, I genuinely like Trent, man. Like, he's me and him talk a decent amount. Like, I genuinely like him. I think what he's doing is very important. I think he brings a lot of people into the church. I just think there's very big differences in approaches and, you know, with certain things. That's all. But it doesn't mean I don't love him as a Christian brother. And the I saw that with the Tucker and Cuomo interview. And Cuomo were talking, and it's like these guys were so far apart. Like, I see the biggest issue going on right now is when somebody doesn't agree with you totally, it's like they're not part of the team. It's like that is what scares me about the trad movement sometimes is that they get very clicky, and they're like, well, this person doesn't agree with me on every single thing, so I can't even talk to this person. Like, it's almost like a leftist perspective. It's like you don't need to agree with everybody on every single thing. Like, I learn things from talking to people that I just like. Me and you have a conversation, and I'm actually like, oh wow, he's got a pretty significant point there. Like, how do you learn something if you're just like, that person's not on my team?
100%. It's like what I call like right wing like purity tests, if you will. Like, you have to agree on 110% or you're out of the group, and that's just not how it works. And so it's like, no one's even asking you for you to like concede a point. What they're just asking you is, will you discuss it and at least be open to being wrong? It's having that humility. And I think you're right. I think it is a problem in the traditionalist movement where you start to leave even like principled things, and you start to wander off into weird stuff. Like, even what we were talking about a second ago, like when it comes to like public breastfeeding and stuff like that, whether it should be clothed or unclothed. I'm sure there's people out there who are like, unless you agree with me on this, we're done. We're not going to talk. And that's a problem. And I think that it really does, at the end of the day, do more harm than good. But it is an interesting point when it comes to uniting the clans. Like, what are we uniting under? So he kind of mentions in the article, and this is something he brought up, he says, like, we all want to get the Latin Mass restored, and we all want to preserve tradition. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's solid. But the big sticking point, at least on paper, between the society and then all the other groups is the new mass and the council. That's the sticking point. And I think that, you know, if we are going to have some type of fruitful dialogue between all the groups and get them to unite, maybe we don't get them all to unite on things like the specifics. Maybe we can get them to unite on things like the council. Some of us say it's erroneous. Some of us say it's at least problematic in its language. Can we at least agree on that? You know, yeah, that we can agree to disagree on the finer points, but we can agree that it's at least has been an issue. It's at least been an issue.
Yeah, I don't see how anybody could not at least admit there's a problem there. Like, there's a problem. Something happened at that council.
Exactly. But then it's
there's clearly a different thing after the council.
Exactly. And so it's like, can we agree on that? Can we agree on that at least the new mass has been more so problematic than helpful? We can get in, we can tune and debate those finer points if we want, but at least been somewhat or more so problematic. That's what I think would be good. And so that's kind of what the point of my video was with Tim. And I messaged him previous and I was like, bro, this is not an attack video. Don't take it this way.
I think we should have you and Tim on together and show how to have these conversations. Yeah. Like we should do something all together. I'll see if Tim's free next Tuesday.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Let's do it.
Why don't we do that? Are you free next Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. So I'll ask Tim if he's free. Maybe the four of us could just sit down and have this conversation. Because I
naming it FSSP versus SSPX, by the way.
Tim comes on. He's like, I'm actually neither. I'm Eastern Catholic that has to go to the new mass.
He's a diocesan TLM guy.
Yeah.
No, he is. Yeah. See, this is the thing. I love that at least Tim is upfront and plays his cards right. Because some people, I think, unjustly accused Tim of like being this snake oil salesman. I've seen people do that where they'll be like, you know, he tries to placate to the trads on the meet.
Don't want to do it next Tuesday.
Why?
Mass of the Ages premiere.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Which will cause some controversy, I'm just going to say, as someone who's watched it.
Yeah, it sounds like they take an anti-SSPX take on it.
They take somewhat. They take a few pot shots. They do a decent job in the beginning outlining it, but then they kind of go off into the world of, and this again, where I say this again with all respect to Tim, but like I can definitely see where kind of more of Tim's more pro Ratzingerian flavors kind of come out as he's been involved with the project, because there's a lot of priests and discussions where it's just like, you know, the new mass has some problems, but the council, oh my goodness, you know, so based and epic. And then you're just sitting there thinking, all of these reforms literally cite the council and are promulgated by the same guys who are at the council. And all of Pope Francis's stuff either cites himself or the council.
I'll tell you what, where are you getting your stuff from? I'm happy. I'm happy that Cameron blew me off.
Oh, did he blow you off? Did he not come
out? Oh, yeah. Cameron's blown us off. So what? I'm kind of glad he has, because it frees me up to give an honest critique of it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of criticism of this new episode.
It's been criticized on Catholic Family News.
I had a lot of criticisms of episode two, and I held back in hopes that Cameron would come on, because I wanted to talk to him. But I had a lot of criticisms of episode two, like the goofy voiceovers and things like that. I thought part one was phenomenal. Part two, I think, was a little goofy with the voices and stuff. But I did like it. I think it was, but I'm going to give a fully honest critique of this part three, because I don't know why not.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be honest. And that's the thing that, like, what I walked away from it was, like, cinematically, it was amazing. All the films are great. But then a lot of the takes, they basically lead down to, like, hey, mainstream church, can't we, like, just dialogue and have our TLM and you guys do your thing? That's kind of the, like, more impression.
Pleading for pity.
Yeah. And so, like, and you know, there was a few shots where the way, like, so some of the priests in it, they would say stuff about Lefebvre that wasn't, you know, no SSPXer would be happy about, which it's like, you could have easily, with how short they were like just small stuff. You could have easily cut that stuff out and broaden your audience. And then nearing the end of it, you know, they do mention the fact that the SSPX was asked if they'd want to come on and be interviewed. And they said, the SSPX said no. And there's various reasons why they said no. It wasn't a diss toward Mass of the Ages. I know some of the reasons why. It wasn't that at all. But the way that it's framed to the average viewer makes it look kind of like, you know, oh, meaning
the SSPX is very smart about it. So they don't let their priests on social media. They're like, they're pretty smart about staying out of this stuff.
Exactly. And I think for one of the reasons why is that the SSPX, again, because they have this like principled opposition to the new mass and to the doctrinal problems, they'll be like, okay, we don't want to get into trad ecumenism where it's just like, hey, we're all buddy buddy because we have the TLM and that's all that matters. And it's like, okay, I don't think we should be hyper exclusivist, but also on the other end, I do agree with you. I don't think that we should just be like, oh, there's no problems. It's just aesthetics and stuff. So I think we should watch it with an open mind, but I do say that I think it's going to have the most controversy of all three films. And I do think that it might, in trad circles, alienate more.
What time does it premiere?
It's, what was it like? I think it was the middle of the day, actually. So if it's in the middle of the day or in the morning, we could totally do something in the evening.
All right. So maybe we'll do next week. Maybe we'll do Tuesday. We'll do the review of the Mass of the Ages, Rob. Nick, you want to come on for that? But I want you back on with Tim maybe on Thursday.
Wait, yeah, but it airs on Tuesday. How are we going to?
Well, if it airs in the middle of the day, we can do the review that night.
I think it might be like more of a night thing. I don't know. I don't know when it airs.
The last two he's done.
Argo says it's going to be in the evening. 8 p.m. Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern. That's rough.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do Wednesday night and Thursday night next week, or Monday night and Thursday night.
What if we did Wednesday and Friday?
I don't want to be up again. Well, I'll be away on Friday. I'm going to Florida.
How about we do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
No, but maybe we'll do a show Monday next week, and we'll do a show Thursday.
That's cool with me.
I don't know because I kind of want to review the. I kind of want to review it.
Anthony Abate, zero stars.
What if we usually go 2 hours. What if we do an hour show starting? Well, okay. How long is the Mass of the Ages? Is it an hour?
It's like an hour 20-ish or so.
What if we just did an hour show once it finished?
We could do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Well, the thing is, I'm off of work Thursday, so I'd rather go late on Wednesday. Let's just do Wednesday and Thursday next week. Are you all right with that?
I don't care.
Yeah, that works.
All right, so Nick, you join us for both shows?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do Wednesday and Thursday next week. I'm going to reach out to Tim and see if Tim wants to come on and chat.
Cool, that'd be great.
All right, man. All right, let's wrap this one up. I got to get some sleep. Nick, I freaking love when you come on, dude.
Hey, I appreciate it, man.
I'm not kidding, man. You're like, I know I say it to you every time, but I just enjoy talking to you so much, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. I like coming on, too. It's a lot of fun.
All right, so we got you Wednesday and Thursday next week. This Thursday, we got Hitchborn, and hopefully we hit 10,000 subs in the next couple of days. I'm going to chop that episode up that we did tonight into clips and put it out. All right, boys, let's wrap it up. See you guys.